Hey folks, it is the 3rd of July 2017, and after 2.5 months, you're listening to episode 62 of AIH Superfans Podcast. I am one of your superfan pals. My name is Alan. On Twitter, you can find me at Slip with Five Eyes or Slip.
Hey, I'm Roddy, and you can catch me at Big Pappy Pig City.
It's your pal Ryan, RB underscore 18, and my summer holidays start tomorrow, so yay.
And it's Chris, CMAC Live on the Twitter machine.
It's the hashtag Summer of Arby. Brian should be joining us shortly. He just finished work at whatever secret job he has in Ohio, so we will hear from him shortly. Guys, it's been a long time. The last time we spoke, the playoffs have just started. Now, when I say a long time, especially for Jets fans, seeing as the team hasn't been playing since we last spoke, but I guess we'll start off. How about them playoffs? Pittsburgh Penguins. We should send our congratulations to all the members of that organization listening to this podcast. Congratulations, Pittsburgh.
And Ron Hainsey.
There you go.
It is pretty funny that Hainsey won a cup before the Jets won a playoff game.
Oh. And we're off.
1 minute 24 seconds, everyone. Just for the record. So
I've been saving that one for like 2 months, guys.
So there you go. Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup. They beat Nashville in lots of overtime games in this playoffs. I don't know if anyone, like, how excited was everybody about the playoffs this year?
Yeah.
They were good until the end. I don't know. I kind of lost interest in the final. Nashville wasn't at full strength, and Pittsburgh just kind of dummied them. And yeah, I was tired. I'm tired of Pittsburgh winning, but what are you going to do?
That whole scene in Nashville was pretty awesome to watch. You know, I'm not like most people. I like when those non-traditional markets have success and the fans get into it. I mean, I think they're traditional now. I thought that anyway, that they had amazing fans, but to just let everybody else see how good their fans are, the chants and the participation and all that kind of stuff is so cool. And once what's his name got hurt there, their centerman, it's kind of like you knew it was over. So, but it was a good time watching them. That was fun to watch.
Yeah, Rene had to be out of his tree, and of course he didn't really show up, you know, half the series, so that's kind of what happened there.
I just like the saltiness of other fans over the atmosphere in Nashville, and I thought, do you just hate yourself? Is that what it is? Because how could you watch that and hate that? Like, if, again, I've said this before, but hockey fans are so, like, they come after each other so hard. They want to and they're so what's the word, duplicitous in their opinions about growing the game. Like, at one side of their mouth, they're like, this is the best game, you should love it, people who don't love hockey are idiots, why would you like other sports, etc., etc. And then on the flip side, they're like, well, fuck these non-traditional markets,
it's our game, it's Canadian game. Yeah, whatever. They'd much rather see it played in Saskatoon than in Nashville or something like that.
And if you're,
I think it's funny because those Nashville fans are what Jets fans think they are, and that's what's funny about it to me. Like, I know, I think we've all said that in a different way, but that's what we think we sound like on TV. Well, no, it's not.
We haven't sounded like that since like the middle of the second year. We haven't sounded like that.
Even still, we have one chant. Go Jets, go. That's it. They're singing back. They're singing along to songs. They're interacting with the PA announcer. Like, it's so cool. It's so different level.
No, wait a second. We come up with the most creative digs at the opposition, like silver medal and
hey, you know the Jets. The Jets had a really good other chant, but then they broke up Glass and Thorburn and Slater. So, unfortunately,
I don't know how. You know what? When Vegas picked Thorburn, do you know how many people mourn the end of an era with the last piece of GST leaving the Jets? Now, you know, that's so pathetic, man. And with Thorburn being drafted by Vegas, the last The last part of GST has now left.
I celebrated the end of the GST line more than I would celebrate the end of the actual GST.
Yeah.
Yes. How many of us even get GST checks? What the heck? How are we celebrating them? It doesn't make any sense. We've got one in 10 years.
And you would hate GST check anyways, wouldn't you? GST day?
Yeah. Yeah. It's not fun.
So yeah, playoffs. Yay. So after the hockey playoffs ended, let's see if we can work our way in order. So Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup. We then move towards teams submitting their protected lists for the Vegas Golden Knights expansion draft. And the Jets do some, there's some maneuvering that happens in Winnipeg. And the biggest thing is that Toby Enstrom agrees to waive his no movement clause, which means that he can become exposed and the Jets can go with a 7-3-1 expand or a protection format. People were pretty happy, right?
Well, just the way that it shook out was kind of, you know, it was entertaining to say the least. Like how many people actually, you know, shit their pants when they heard them pick Chris Thorburn.
I have to like, say, honestly, it's the most Chevy and Jets move ever to spend an asset to stand pat. But yeah, I don't know. It still seemed odd that they had to spend an asset to ask Toby to waive that clause, and then hummed and hawed and didn't say boo about it for a week. Right? It was just so secretive. It turns out they asked them months in advance, and I don't know, did it pay off for them? I don't know. Maybe. Maybe not. It just kind of seemed boring. Everyone else was sort of getting into the GM mode, right? Be a GM mode and listening to leaks and trying to figure out who was exposed, and here we are twiddling our thumbs.
So in that moment, that moment, though, when everything came together and Vegas picked Chris Thorburn, it was like, you know, a good half hour of speculation back and forth and what's happening. And, you know, it didn't end up being anything really of great merit, but I thought it was probably one of the most entertaining hours in this whole summer, right?
Yeah, because a thing happened.
Because a thing happened, and there was mass speculation that something else had to be happening too, right? So
I mean, a thing happened, but in the end, not much really happened, which is funny. The Jets,
yeah, we lost Lilligren.
The Jets ended up protecting Armia, Kopp, Little, Lowry, Perreault, Scheifele, and Wheeler up front. They protected Bufflin, who had to be protected on an NMC. Myers and Trouba in net. They protected Hellebuck. So that was, you know, in the end, I think the speculation going into the expansion draft was it was either going to be Dano or Enstrom who were going to be snagged. And ultimately what happened was the Jets gave up position in the draft. So they gave up the 13th overall draft pick in exchange for the 24th overall draft pick. And the Jets also gave up a third round pick in 2019, I believe. And that was it. I mean, I'm not usually the guy that criticizes the GM, but
no,
yeah, you know, in looking at this, honestly, you have to walk into the expansion draft. The first thing thinking is a team is going to lose an asset. Like every team loses an asset in the draft. You can't walk away and not lose something. So, from that sense, I don't think the Jets did all that bad. Ultimately, the argument will be which player that could have been picked between 13 and 23 that you could have otherwise had, and what do they turn into. But ultimately, drafts are speculation, and at the 13th pick, I mean, was there, you know, ultimately a humongous difference between that pick and 24? I don't know.
Well, the one thing that I can definitely say is that spending the asset to keep this group together, even though at the time I still thought they had to do something, and we'll get to what they did in free agency, but it told me at least that they thought they were close, and that they thought that spending some futures to keep this group together was worth it. what this group has done together is pretty questionable about why you should keep them together, but clearly they think they're on to something. And yeah, I mean, Chevy dropped in the first round instead of moving up to get a giant Coke machine, so that's okay.
But it tells me now that they're more win now than they are win later, correct? Especially with
what was that?
They're in win now mode more than we've ever thought they'd be at this point. Well, they're committing to this group, and they've added pieces to compete now. Is what, like, I'm getting a little ahead of myself and as far as what we're talking about in this show, but
yeah. If you've seen Chevy in some of his pressers, it looks like he's been stress eating for the past little while. He's just a little different from when he first got here.
Are you fat shaming Chevy?
Not at all. It's just that he looks a little haggard, like he's been working hard to try and fix this thing, probably knowing that he's going into the last year of his deal and has still not been re-signed.
It's his contract year. It's his contract year, both of them. Well,
no, but maybe winning matters now, because there was a lot of talk about both him and the coach being re-signed, and they haven't done it yet.
I'll give it time.
Yeah, that's what they said this week, is that it's just a matter. Somebody said that this week.
But what message are they? What message are they going to? You know, what message are they going to push now? They've got their established NHL goalie, and they've got another left shot defenseman, right? That they've signed this week. So
they've only got one more. They've only got one more move. If there's a failure before, it's the two of them, and that's the move we've been asking for 3 years: the assistant coaches and the goalie coach. Like, if you bring an established goalie that has stat line that's relatively consistent, he had a huge dip at the beginning and won last year. You bring that in, and all of a sudden he's another Pavlik, or Pavlik goes to the best goalie coach in the Rangers and all of a sudden has a good year. You're going to look and say, maybe we need to shake this up, I would think.
Well, on the surface anyways, what they used as a crutch all last year was the fact that they didn't have a consistent goalie play, and they didn't have a veteran backup for Hellebuck, right? Now bringing Mason in, and from all reports, him being the starter, right, going forward, now you've got a legit NHL starter that's been an NHL starter for years now, and then you added your, whether it's your bottom pairing left-handed defenseman. Where are your excuses now that you used all year last year for not?
Well, you know where the excuse is. They have a built-in excuse in 16 games when Myers hasn't played yet, and hopefully nothing goes wrong. But and Enstrom gets hurt again, and then all of a sudden you got another excuse. Now maybe that doesn't buy Maurice what he thinks it's going to get him, which is till the end of the year. I don't know. But
I don't know. But most
Myers going to play?
Well, but that doesn't.
I don't even think he's going to play.
That's besides the point. Last year they used the goalie as a scapegoat all year, right?
And that was the big difference.
No, the biggest thing that they talked about last year was goaltending. Goaltending was the issue. Goaltending was what they pinned the whole season on, was better goaltending. Am I wrong?
Do you remember when Pavlik got up and they praised the poise that he provided this team? Like, yes, it was the goaltending that was lambasted, though Hellebuck put up quality numbers compared to the garbage that was here the 5 years before.
Just as good as the numbers that Pavlik had for 5 years, right? A 907. Like, it wasn't stellar. He still had a winning record. Still had a winning percentage. Yeah. Wait, he was, what, nine games over 500?
That's right. If Hutchinson and Pavlik have the same winning percentage as Hellebuck, the Jets make the playoffs. So you can blame it on Hellebuck all you want. It's the backup goalies that cost us last year.
I know, but that's what they're going.
No, I'm not disagreeing with you. Yeah. I'm not disagreeing with you. But remember, up to Christmas, it was the schedule they were blaming everything on. Then it was the injuries, and now in their season end. Now that the season's over, they're going back.
Well, there's no World Cup anymore, right?
Oh, there's a whole bunch of stuff. I mean, if we go over the excuses checklist at this point, They have argued that they found a goaltender and maybe a defenseman. I mean, at least the team is saying it, right? I don't know if I'm convinced, but the team is saying it. So that's out the window. And could the Jets have a more favorable schedule this year?
Not to start. Aren't they on the road a ton early? Like, that's the built-in excuse.
Yeah, but in the last quarter of, or like third of the season, they have a 10-game homestand and then a 6-game homestand. They play two-thirds of their games at home.
But what if the season's already over and then they blame the road trips?
They can come back at the end. They can win another 7 in a row.
I don't think.
Plus, there's Sorry, Roddy. It's impossible they could start the season slow. They have all that momentum from the end of last year, so that's impossible.
Absolutely, there's a reason why they won. You won out last year, right?
But the scary thing is, though, Mason lost his last start in Philly. So can you start him in game one?
Well, there's a few pressing questions about this that I'm wondering from this momentum thing. One is, do the exhibition games just not count towards the momentum? Because I'm assuming that they don't. It's just regular season momentum, right? And then the new players that they brought in, does the momentum apply to them?
Yeah, like I think that Melchiori and Nelson Noije have to play because they were part of that momentum streak, weren't they?
Chemistry, right? It's chemistry. It's about the chemistry.
Yeah, exactly.
Why don't we bother signing anybody anyways? Like, that's right. We beat the world the last 2 weeks of the season. We were world beaters. Like, why the fuck did we sign anybody? Honestly.
Let's ask the mainstream media how that works, how the winning streak at the end of last year works for next year. And when we all talk about that next podcast, how that all works. Because we're obviously wrong.
It's measurable with the energy inside the room. Like, you can actually measure the energy inside the room with some sort of meter.
So a couple of questions, guys, about the expansion draft. Based on how things went this year, do you think that George McPhee of the GM of the Vegas Golden Knights, do you think that he made enough moves, or do you think he could have done more with this opportunity?
I think he could have had a better opening day roster by far, but you have to be scheduling for 3 or 4 years down the road, obviously. But their team could have been almost as good as any team in the West, in my opinion.
But I don't think that's what his primary goal was, right?
Oh no, I agree. I'm just saying that's the way I look at it. Is he could have had a playoff competitive team probably right out of the gate.
He's
turned into a bunch of these assets into multiple second and third round picks over the next 2 years, with more to come. They still have one or two too many defensemen that they're trying to flip. I mean, they're going to try and ice a competitive roster, but they're not trying to win this year. It's pretty clear to see.
No, they've kind of got a free pass. They've got a lot of interest in the team right now, and why would they want to compete? They're setting themselves up for the future.
No,
unlike another organization that kind of had a free pass for 4 years. And
they have 7 years to draft and develop. What are we talking about?
Well, that's what I'm saying. You know, unlike another team that, you know, moved to a new market that was hockey crazy and had a free pass and sold out building for 5 years, you know, they actually are thinking about the future and acquiring assets and building from the ground up. So that's another story, right, guys?
Yeah. Yes, it is.
So Vegas ended up with a whole bunch of draft picks, including in the end, I think they had 3 first-round picks. They had 3 picks in the top 15 in the draft, and then a bunch of seconds. They have many picks next year and the year after. They really loaded up there. You're right. I mean, who they pick on their team? Like, Marc-Andre Fleury is the poster boy for the team at this point, right?
Yeah, James Neal's there. He's not a bad sniper. They got Shea Theodore out of Anaheim, which is a nice young piece. But yeah, it's just pieces, right?
Yeah, just guys.
Marcero from Florida, right?
Oh yeah.
What did he score? 29 goals this year, or something?
Bradley Smith, who last year was very good. Yeah, there were some weird deals. I mean, it was interesting to see the teams that needed to clear cap and how much they gave up to move money. Like, the Islanders gave up their first to take Grabowski's contract, stuff like that. So,
can you imagine if it was Chevy doing this? He'd just be like, 30 picks, no trades.
Give me your third pick.
Yeah, that would just, that'd be it. He's like, what, you can trade things? What? Maybe in a few cases, he'd be like, wait a minute, how tall is this guy? Okay, let's figure this out.
Side deals to let the tallest guys be unprotected.
Exactly. Yeah. So Vegas's picks were announced at the same time as the NHL awards. I guess what the most notable awards were Connor McDavid winning the Hart Trophy. What's his name? Brent Burns winning the Norris Trophy. And who won the Vezina? Who won the Vezina this year? Now I wasn't paying attention. I'm serious. Serious question.
The best goalie in the league.
Bobrovsky did.
Yeah. And then there was the Calder Trophy. Who won the Calder Trophy?
I think there was one guy that got 3 votes.
Do you?
All from Winnipeg.
I thought that I would see a lot more bitching and dissension over Matthews winning the Calder Trophy than what happened. I'm assuming that by the virtue of him getting, what, like 164 first place votes to Liney's 3?
Yeah.
That kind of shut everyone up?
That was a landslide.
I think that last 3 weeks of the season, though, there was no... even Jets fans were finally figuring it out at the end there. Like, Matthews lit it up, and what did Laine score? One goal in the last 3 weeks of the season?
It was something like that.
And I'm sure the Leafs being in last place last year and then making it to the playoffs and having good playoffs led. Who's going to bitch about that now?
Even the most fan can't deny what happened. I mean,
There was like nothing. There was it was interesting. You'd think there would be a couple fans that would have lost it, but I didn't see any. Then again, they probably blocked me. So,
Brian, you're there?
I am, but my phone is also ringing at the same time.
Oh, all right. Well, aren't you so popular,
I hear
you guys?
And I hear the call noise.
Okay, that's too bad. Are you, we're just talking, did you think that Patrick Laine was robbed for the Calder Trophy?
I think Zach Werenski was robbed. Laine, no.
All right, so we go past the NHL awards. We've already been through the expansion draft, Ryan, so you snooze, you lose.
All right.
We are on...
You're going to miss my Thorburn takes.
We can still talk about them because we are going to go on... we're going to do the NHL draft next, and then we'll get to free agency. So the NHL draft comes up next. That was last weekend from Chicago. And I'm just looking over this first round here. I guess we'll start with the Jets. Jets at the 24th pick, which they traded down to originally Columbus's pick. And they pick Finnish forward, right winger, Christian Vesalainen. People, by the way, enough. I'm fucking so tired of people being like, well, he's got Liney in his name, or he's from Finland, so he's the same. Like, the whole he's from Finland, he's the same. Can you imagine, like, if this was, like, let's just say an African country? It's like, oh, they're all the same from there. Like, I'm so tired of hearing that stuff. But anyways... there is chemistry though, insofar as he's played, I'm sure he's played plenty of, pre-professional hockey games with Liney. So that's, I guess, good news. But, other than that, I heard, like generally positive commentary other than the fact that it's not a defenseman, right?
You guys do know that Olli Jokinen and Antti Miettinen are from Finland too, right? So.
Whoa, that's a Winnipeg Jets legend. You.
Well, Mittens is a legend in his own ante.
Yeah. All the wrong reason. I think from all accounts, Vesalainen was a good pick at 24, but it was painful to watch that run of defensemen in and around, 14 to 18. You know, you watch Toronto, Calgary get Liljegren and
Valimaki.
And, the Jets eventually got their defensemen in the second and third rounds. But, I mean, outside of probably Kishir and Patrick. No one's playing this year anyway, so.
The Jets come back in the second round, and they pick up American Dylan Samberg, who played last year with who? The Hermantown Hermantown High in the high school hockey?
Awesome.
Let's see. Third round, Jonathan Kovacevic, right? That's how we say it?
Yep.
A Canadian. A very very Jets-like move, getting a Canadian player. Then Santeri Virtanen in the fourth round, who is in the under-20 league in Finland. He is a forward. It doesn't tell me which wing he plays. It just says forward. Fifth round, the Jets pick Leo Gon... I don't even know. Gonki? I don't know who that is. He was with Cape Breton. Hopefully he stays there because I'm going to see them play a game in the fall. A German player. In the sixth round, we have Arvid Holm from Sweden. And in the seventh round, I believe the Jets had two picks because they traded with Montreal last year. And they picked up Skylar McKenzie, another Canadian, playing with the Portland Winterhawks. And Croix Evingson of the United States. So the Jets, once again, two Canadians and a bunch of non-Canadians. Best drafting team. So again, Jets fans, pick one. Is Canada the best country for prospects, or are the Jets doing it right? You tell me. So other, I mean, so it's I mean, you know, it sounds like a, you know, another. I mean, the one thing that the Jets do right, drafts usually aren't. There's some glaring things that we talk about, but drafts usually aren't bad for this team. It's kind of like our Stanley Cup.
Yep. It'll be interesting to see how they do. I do appreciate the height difference between those two seventh-round picks. I think that Skyler kid's 5'8", and that Evanston is like...
I think he's 6'5".
I don't know. He's a lot taller than the other kid.
Oh, definitely. I'm pretty sure he's 6'5".
Yeah. So maybe the next Logan Stanley, who's to say?
You mean...
Actually, I like this Coke machine.
Well,
we have a Coke machine and a Pepsi machine now. It's really good.
There you go.
Were there anything in the draft of note from other teams or any surprises that you guys had any thoughts on?
Vegas did really well. I really like Vegas' draft.
Rushed.
I want to buy, like, I remember on the first day when they, you know, Glass, but then they picked Suzuki, and I was like, damn, like, good job, Vegas. And then they got to Brännström. But then I was out and about on day two and turn on my phone and see that they picked Nick Hague. Fuck,
yeah,
that shit.
Oh, yeah.
I know.
Yeah. So, yeah, their first four picks are ridiculous.
Yeah.
Every guy Jets fans wanted. They got them all. I don't know if I should have painted with that brush and saying Jets fans, but...
Real Jets fans.
Let's talk about that, right? The real Jets fans.
Yeah.
We'll get it. If we have time, let's hold off. We got all summer. we actually have hockey content to cut. You know, we don't have to find filler yet. Heischer ended up going first to New Jersey, and Nolan Patrick, after sitting at the top of most people's draft charts for the good part of 2 years, ended up at number two to Philadelphia. I don't think that either team is terribly disappointed there, right?
I think Philly is incredibly happy to get Patrick at two.
I think I have heard that they knew they were getting him, so that means that Jersey must have been stoked to get Heischer too, because sounded like Billy knew all that they were going to be picking him. So
yeah, what did they just say? Patrick had another abdominal surgery like a week before the draft or something, and they were well aware, and they were still taking him because
he got that surgery on Philly's request too. So
beforehand
he was even their property. So they knew. Yeah.
Rounding out the top five, Miro Heiskanen goes to Dallas, Cale Makar goes to Colorado, two defensemen there, and Elias Pettersson goes to the Vancouver Canucks at five. We mentioned Glass. I mean, other notable picks for me being out here in Toronto. Woo! Owen Tippett goes to Florida at 10, and Gabe Vilardi falls to the LA Kings at 11.
LA went thrilled with that.
Oh, yeah. Again, Suzuki over to the Golden Knights. Liljegren to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Amazing. Like...
amazing.
Yeah, can we give like some of potential Jets prospects mono all year while we're if we have a lower pick, please?
Yeah, no.
What, somebody give Dahlin some mono.
Go lick his spoons and
fuck.
Yeah, so people in Toronto are pretty pumped up about that, amongst other things. And you're right, there was a run of defensemen. And, you know, I mean, the picks between 12... I said, you know, your regret might be what happens between picks 13 and pick 24. So the players you gave up, Nick Suzuki, Callan Foote, Eric Brännström, Juuso Välimäki, Liljegren... Vakanian, I don't know, I should know that, shouldn't I? Josh Norris, Robert Thomas, Philip Chittle, Kaylor, oh yeah, Yamamoto goes to Edmonton. That was a reach. I mean, probably a fun reach. And, Pierre Oliver Joseph, all players that we'll be watching closely and comparing them to Vesalainen for the next, 10 years. Cause that's what we do as superfans.
Yes, sir.
So no trades at the draft, though I did love the news story. The Jets almost made some trades.
Almost. We were close, guys.
It just so happened that everyone they tried to get had a no trade clause. It's crazy how that works.
I know, right?
It's unbelievable.
Saved by the no trade clause.
So it turned out to be Emelin too? Was the rumor?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
What a shit trade that would have been. Fuck. Like.
Well, we'll get to who we did sign and what it means, but it just... Their pro scouting on the blue line still leaves a little something to be desired. Holy moly.
So, before we get to the free agency piece, lost in all of this shuffle was kind of a little bit of a midnight tweet from the Jets with an announcement.
Like, just buried news on a front, like right at the end of the news cycle, hey?
Yeah, right at the end there. But fortunately for us Jets fans, we have locked up an essential piece of our decor as Ben Chiarot is coming back to the Winnipeg Jets for... What's going on over there?
We're ringing the bell, apparently.
2 seasons, and I guess what, the Thorburn money is just being shuffled over to Chiarot?
He's making more, isn't he? 1.4, I thought?
1.4 million, yeah.
Oh. That's a good offer, buddy.
Yeah. So there you go. 2 seasons of Ben Chiarot. So one of the big signings taken care of.
It's huge for the Facebook community because Jess Facebook thinks that Ben Chiarot's our best defenseman by far.
Oh, Reddit too.
Oh.
Reddit and Facebook.
Yep,
oh, Jeff all Reddit, over yes. The Ben Chiarot.
So that leaves, and we get to unrestricted free agents, but with restricted free agents left to sign, we have Brandon Tanev, Andrew Kopp, and Connor Hellebuck all in need of contracts at this point. None of them are probably going to be very big, I would imagine.
No, probably not.
So, probably a few bridge deals, and that'll be that. So let's get to July 1st. So I guess we will start with what our own team did here. So the Jets came out, and I guess in good news they did things, right?
Yep, right.
They addressed exactly what they needed to.
Yeah.
With what, we're not sure, right?
Well, they signed Steve Mason, who played last year in Philadelphia. And he is, of course, a goaltender. 2 years, $4.1 million per season is the average value of that contract. And then also signed Dmitry Kulikov, who was playing with Buffalo And he is a left shot defenseman. 3 years, 4.333333 million cap hit a season. So those were the big signings, and they had roster spots that they had to fill, and they did that. So now the next question is, how good a job did they do with these guys?
Yes.
Okay.
They filled
Who's going first? Who's going first?
Go, Arby. Arby, you go.
Okay. They filled the two biggest needs. They needed a goalie. They needed a left shot defenseman. The left shot defenseman pushes Ben Chiarot up into the press box when everyone's healthy, and pushes Michael Hutchinson into the minors. So that's good. The questionable thing is whether or not you are a true Hellebuck believer, because Mason's not being paid that to back up. And in Philly, the reason he left is because he didn't want to be part of a tandem. So how many starts is he going to get? What's that going to do to Hellebuck's development? But at the very least, he's a NHL starter, something we have not had here ever, or quality one at least. As for Kulikov, yeah, he's left shot defenseman, but he was awful last year in Buffalo. Ryan Lambert on Puck Daddy says that could be the worst contract in the league, what they just signed him to. Top 10 worst, guaranteed. So we'll see if he can bounce back. Apparently he had a back injury last year, but he was horrible in Buffalo. But at least he's a left shot defenseman that pushes Chiarot down, because he's worse. So if Kulikov can be dragged around by Bufflin or beat up soft minutes with Myers, then we'll see. So that's my thought on those two.
Is Kulikov slotted top four, or is he bottom pairing?
Bottom pairing, I think.
I don't know.
He better be bottom pairing.
Apparently, Chevy thought, I think I heard him say or saw a tweet say that he thought he could fit into the top four if needed.
So then that would mean him playing with Buff, right?
Mm-hmm.
I guess.
And then Toby, Toby and Myers on the bottom pair.
I mean, if that's your bottom pair defenseman healthy, I mean,
we're not bad.
Even if
we're not bad,
we're not bad at all. And again, it comes back to what I said earlier, though, about the Myers being healthy. There's even a different side to this health thing that I think people are forgetting. Even if he's quote unquote healthy, I don't think that means he's ever going to be 100% again, right? And I think a lot of people are forgetting that even if he comes back, he's seen some shit.
$4.3 million for 3 years is a lot to pay a fifth or sixth defenseman, though, is it not?
A lot.
Yeah.
You know,
what Lambert's day on Puck Daddy said, they're paying him to be a quality number three, and he might not be a six. So take that for what it's worth. But
well, and then I think the bigger deal here is, I mean, the Jets have some room in that cap, but this Trouba contract is going to be happening soon, and the Morrissey's going to get a raise. I just call him the Morrissey.
And the Ehlers.
Well, and I'm just looking at defensemen right now, but yeah, you're right. We've got some forwards to deal with. Like, what's Trouba going to be commanding now, right? Like, we're talking, it's no brainer, it's north of six. It's just how far north of six, right?
Probably closer to seven.
So you've got, right now, eight defensemen under contract, just under, like, basically it's $29 million is what you've got committed to them. Now, Enstrom comes off the books. I don't think there's any way
Enstrom comes off.
Yeah. I don't think that Enstrom is with the team beyond next season. So that's one place where you're going to get some money back, and that can be reshuffled to Trouba. And then I guess you cross your fingers that Poolman or somebody else fits in, or fucking Coke Machine.
Poolman, because it won't be him. It won't be the other guy.
Yeah, yeah.
It'll be Pepsi Machine before Coke Machine.
Yeah. So. That's a lot of money, and hopefully he, you know, for $4.3 million, you got to be playing close to 20 minutes, right? So hopefully that ends up happening, and this becomes a good depth six defenseman signing, which we desperately need. And then, yeah, the Mason contract. So, sorry. Anyone else want to chime in?
All I'm going to say is that they address needs, and to me, that what the message they're trying to put forth is they're going to make the playoffs this year. The playoffs and competing in the playoffs is their goal. To me, that's the message. The message is they're competing now.
Well,
they want to compete now.
And I guess you look at it looking back now, you say, I guess Chevy's goal was, I want to try to make my team better and give them more depth without sacrificing any existing assets.
Any futures, yeah.
And he didn't. He ended up, you know, these guys don't cost anything but money. And he lost a couple of draft spots and a third round pick and essentially kept the lineup intact. So I guess he believes in it. And, you know, as much as we, the story that we've talked about is what the team has added, I think it's even more important to talk about what the team has lost in the last couple of weeks. So, Thorburn, Chris Thorburn ends up being the pick that goes to Vegas, and then he gets signed by St. Louis. 2 years, I think, $900,000 a season.
Yep.
Amazing.
That's amazeballs. That's truly amazing.
Hey, man, he's getting paid less than he was in Winnipeg.
They had to replace Reeves. Come on, guys.
They replaced Reeves with the guy that Reeves beat up.
Every time.
The guy, everybody
beat him up. Wow, but especially Reeves.
Oh, yeah.
By the way, who is now the designated face puncher in Winnipeg? Is it Lowry?
It's Nick Ehlers. It's Nick Ehlers.
Oh, yeah. Ask Tyson Barrie.
Then also we had Andre Pavlik. Hopefully wasn't having any drinks during the negotiation period. And ended up signing with the New York Rangers for, what, 2 years at 1.3?
Yeah, well, that was only 1 year.
One year, 1.3.
1 year deal.
It's his prove-it deal.
Oh.
Coming into his own.
If all goes well, Chevy will sign him for another 5 years next year.
Oh, my God. I thought his prove-it deal was in the Czech Republic, so good for him for finding $1 million. I can't believe it.
I thought he was in the KHL for sure.
Hey, man, the dude's going to make $1 million to play 10 games and to watch Lundqvist up close, so good for him.
Pretty dreamy best, tandem.
Best-looking goalie tandem of all time, period.
No doubt.
And then Mark Stewart bought out, and surprisingly, no one has snatched him up yet.
But that's huge, though. That's huge.
There's a team that plays at the Iceplex that's talking about snatching them up. They're just a senior men's team. But they're only talking about
it. And Peluso and Postma also left, too, right?
Yeah, well, Postma got signed in Boston a year at about 700 grand.
I thought we were talking about good players that got signed.
Well, Bermie's going to Vancouver.
That's better.
So he's gone somewhere. Were there any other former Jets that bounced around at
Bermie him? Wasn't a Jet, though, was he?
Well,
he was a Coyote.
Well, he was a former Jet, though.
But he was a former Jet.
Yeah, I know, but that was a long time ago. I already cried my tears over that a long time ago.
Thorburn was a Golden Knight, though. We're still talking about him.
Yeah, that's it.
Golden Knights legend, Chris Thorburn. And then Hainsey got signed in Toronto.
Yep.
They pick up for them.
Remember when we couldn't trade him for anything at the deadline a couple years ago?
He wasn't worth anything.
He wasn't worth anything, guys.
And now he's a Stanley Cup champion.
And he'll probably be a two-time champion after this year.
You're
go
probably
Leafs.
Probably right.
He got a no trade clause out of that deal too, I think.
Oh, nice.
Wow.
How many seasons has he been in the NHL? 11? And this was his first year in the playoffs, and he won a Stanley Cup.
Yeah.
It's weird, eh?
I don't
know. Well, and I know, the Leafs will have to... Sorry, go ahead, Arby.
Okay, I was just going to say, all I know is that 7 years in, seven drafts later, 7 summers later, we're finally free of these awful hockey players. It's it's actually kind of exciting. Even I'll admit it.
You've got to get that on a loop there.
Yeah, get that on a. I did. I need that for my ringtone.
I tweeted something out like that, and it got almost 100 likes. So that's crazy. Stuart, Thorburn, and Pavlik have been the holy trinity of awful since they've been back, and they're gone. And I don't care what Stuart does. He can go and sign an AHL deal with the Moose and be their strength and conditioning coach. Just get him off the ice. So finally, he's gone. And the people that love his contributions, well, doesn't matter. He's gone. We can all move on. I'm not in love with the Kulikov deal. We'll see how he does. Still not in love with the bottom six based on the usage I expect Maurice to use, but 7 years in, and I think the Jets might be trying to win, and that's exciting.
I'm just excited that there's no more excuses this year. I don't think there's going to be an excuse that they can use.
Oh, we'll find out.
No,
well, organizationally, I agree. Right. They can't make excuses.
They can't. They did it. They signed two big free agents, and they filled the needs that they had, and they're wanting to win now. There's no excuses anymore. It's on the coaching, and it's on the coaching now. Spotlight's on coaching.
It's on Chevy.
Chevy effectively, you know what, did what he could do, like on the surface, anyways, and he's put it in Paul Maurice's court.
He totally did. Did anyone see that quote where he said that he gave the coaches everything that was on their wish list?
No.
Isn't that the whole point? You spend all of these assets, not a whole ton, but to keep a Dano and to make sure that you didn't have to trade away these guys. Now you better be playing them. If you're going to make that effort to keep those guys, they better be in your lineup. And, I mean, they're not really going to have any other choice now, right? Some of the dead weight's gone. But you've got to play them, and you've got to play them where they belong. So tired of hockey teams, this, you've got to come in and play on the fourth line and all this stuff. Put a guy in where he can succeed. I heard somebody say Kyle Connor could play on the first line. That would make him better. And I was like, no kidding. If he played with Scheifele and Wheeler, what kind of damage would he do? Like, rather than putting him in with Lowry and going, why isn't he scoring? Put the guys in the right position, and that's all on coaching. You're so right.
I'm just going to run through a couple of the more significant contracts from free agency that are non-Jets related. Today, Radulov signed with Dallas, 5 years, 6.25 a season. So much salt in Montreal. You know,
That was beautiful.
Honestly, people who bitch and moan about players doing what they're allowed to do gets on my nerves. The guy's a fucking unrestricted free agent. Oh, we gave you a chance. Yeah, that's all it was. Why didn't the team lock him up last year?
Why didn't they put their offer out sooner?
Yeah.
It came out that they had the same offer on the table, but it was too late because he already agreed to Dallas.
Yeah, it's just so much worse. Hockey fans are supposed to be like blue collar, and all they do is side with management, and it's ridiculous.
That is interesting.
Yeah. Huh. Joe Thornton agrees to stay in San Jose for a hefty $8 million contract, but I guess since they don't have to pay Marlow, they can afford it for one more season. Kuznetsov is back with Washington on a monster deal, $7.8 million over 8 years.
Wow.
Oh, of course, that is only the second largest contract signed today. As Carey Price is going to be in Montreal. Well, you'd like to say 8 years, but he'll probably get traded for Renee.
Oh my god!
But 8 year contract, $10.5 million a season. Good for you, Carey Price.
Well done, sir.
Let's see. Patrick Marleau signs for 3 years with the Toronto Maple Leafs in a heavily front-ended deal, which is good because in that third year, the Leafs are going to have to give raises to many great rookie players and may not have the room.
That's a fun deal for Toronto. That's interesting.
Well, Patrick Marleau, I mean, at this point, he's 37, but he is, I mean, he can still score goals, right?
I think they said he hasn't missed a game in 5 years either, so.
Yeah, and he's going to play, he's probably going to go up on that Nylander-Matthews line.
Oh, that's exciting.
You think so?
They're going to be really good, man.
They are really good.
It's ridiculously exciting. Yeah. I'm coming up on the end of my second year in Toronto, and from the time I arrived here to now is crazy how different it is with that team.
Well, speaking of teams going for it, I mean, we've talked about the Jets finally getting to a point where winning matters, but it seems that Toronto knows that their window is now with those kids on their entry-level deals, so they're going for it. That's awesome.
Yeah, they've got a lot of guys on their ELCs, and they're spending the money to get them competitive and putting the right pieces around them, right? Like,
yep, it's awesome.
Kevin Shattenkirk goes to the Rangers, 4 years, $6.65 million a season, which I've been reading is people are thinking that's not a bad contract at all, eh?
No, yeah. People are saying he's getting paid too much. People are saying he's getting paid too little.
It's just like,
sounds like he left a lot on the table to go to his, what, hometown, right?
Yeah, that's what it is.
What else have I got as I kind of scroll through this? Who signed the $13 million contract? That was Kulikov. So Montreal signs Carl Asner, 5 years, $4.625 million. I haven't heard very good reviews of that contract.
No.
On the flip side, though, Justin Williams, 2 years, $4.5 million in Carolina.
Our Allen's doppelganger.
Yeah. You guys are so funny. let's see here. We had, I think that these were, we had Cam Fowler re-signing in Anaheim for 8 years, $6.5 million. So there's your Truba contract. Martin Jones signs up back in San Jose, right? 6 years, $5.75 million. Mark Edward Vlasic, San Jose, $7 million a season for 8 years. Man, should have played hockey when I was younger. Anything else? Any other contracts that anyone wants to mention?
I think Hanzel to Dallas is an interesting one.
Dallas stocked up again. They seem to stock up every year, and people say, look out for Dallas, and the results end up being mixed.
Yeah, this year, well, it'll be interesting to see. People aren't high on Bishop. I don't mind him, but... I think the Radulov and Hanzel adding it to that mix is interesting. It's not good for the Central. If Dallas comes back into the mix, then that's another spot you have to worry about. So
Hanzel's always hurt. That's the problem with him. He misses so much time, but he's a good hockey player. So
It's
going to help them when he's in the lineup for sure.
We also had a couple of trades, I guess, over the last little while. Travis Harmonic ended up going to Calgary. And Calgary have, what, two firsts and a second next year?
Wow.
But if you need something, you got to do something. You want to talk about going all in and, you know, they've got good forwards on their entry levels and stuff like that. We saw what four number two defensemen can get you, right? And what Nashville did. I think it's awesome that they did that. I mean, is it going to hurt? It might hurt in a few years, but you got to go when you got to go.
Well, and they have Giordano, Hamilton, Brody, and Harmonic all locked in for the next 3 years on those contracts.
And they have Michael Stone, too, as their number five.
Also 3 years on that contract still. So they're locked. They still need to find somebody else to add back there, but... It's not too bad for the money that they're spending, right?
Mm-hmm.
How does that compare to ours as far as cap space?
Well,
you said $29 million, and we're paying Truba and Morrissey a combined two.
Yeah.
Well, not for long.
Well, exactly, but we're still up to almost 40% of the cap with our defensemen, and we're not paying our two best defensemen anything.
Not yet.
That, That Kulikov and Buffs deal in 3 years could be
going to haunt us. Yeah,
yeah,
they're bad backhand. Yeah.
Jordan Eberle got traded to the New York Islanders, and I'm trying to find. I don't think the New York Islanders signed anyone. I'm looking over the free agent list, and their emblem does not appear once all the way down this list.
I don't recall them getting anybody. Yeah, just Eberle or Ryan Strome, right?
Ryan Strome. Yeah, did they give up draft picks?
Nope.
Was it
one on one?
It was straight up.
Cirelli makes he won a cup in Boston and lucked into McDavid. Other than that, oh boy.
Yeah,
the list of people he's traded.
And Eberle?
That would win a cup.
Yeah.
So there's the Eberle deal, and it's been so much has been happening. Am I missing any significant deals?
But just on the topic of Sagan, I think Boston let Joe Morrow go, and then they bought out Jimmy.
Nothing left for Sagan in Boston. Nothing.
But he's also traded Taylor Hall, Blake Wheeler, Eberle, Sagan.
Wheeler, that's right, for Boris Valabek, and at least they won the cup with Pepsi. But holy,
they need to look into trading Logan Stanley quick. If Valabek pulled Wheeler,
we've got a deal in Superfans that would ask.
So yeah, we'll get to that right away. Now, one I wanted to talk about two contracts, really one contract, but there are two big contracts that have yet to be signed. The biggest one being the Connor McDavid contract, which is looking like it's going to be about $13.5 million for 8 years is what's going to happen. And I have heard both sides. And I honestly, for once, I feel like both sides are actually putting forward reasonable arguments. So I have my side, but I understand the other side. But what does everybody think? Is this a deal that Edmonton should be making?
Well, yes. In this NHL, I think you've got to leave some on the table if you're going to surround yourself with better talent. I realize that at 13.5, that'd be the same percentage as what Crosby signed, that $8.7 million deal back in the day, but the cap isn't going up as fast as it was then.
No. And if you look at it, look at Chicago and what Chicago's been having to do, right, since signing Kane and Taves. Like, they're $20 million. I see that, but they've got a lot of young guys, too, that they've got to re-up. And, you know, now it's making guys like, you know, Draisaitl expendable right now.
But which is, as much as Chicago has struggled under that model, Pittsburgh has done well.
Yeah.
Kind of under a similar model, like really front loading money and then kind of surrounding them with players who are elevated by.
Yeah. But they're not 20 million deep. Right?
Yeah,
like
deep.
Well, Crosby and Malkin are what? How much are they together?
We're like 17. Pittsburgh Penguins. They are collectively 18.2 million dollars.
Yeah. That helps. A little.
A little. It I mean, helps that's a little. But, I mean, you've got a $7 million Phil Kessel contract on top of that, and a $7.2 million Chris Letang contract.
And a $6 million Fleury contract.
Yeah. Well, and then where the difference is between them and Chicago is the back end, right? They don't have the back end talent or the back end contracts that Chicago has either, right? So that's why they're suffering. They don't have that depth on D that Chicago has had, you know. They've lost depth this offseason. You know, the Hjalmarsson trade and everything.
Trade, yeah, Hjalmarsson.
There's a tree. That's a huge trade, too, that we forgot. But but they've remodeled it differently. And a Crosby compared to Kane and Taves, I don't know. What's more valuable? But they've obviously retooled their team to be front-end heavy, and they've been successful the last 2 years, right?
Yep.
But isn't... I mean, Connor McDavid is, I'm sorry, but he is he is a vastly different player than those guys.
Oh, he's the best player in the world. And
yes,
and
it's not even close.
Oh yeah, no. I mean, you got to pay him what he asked for. If I was the player, I mean, it's hard to say. We're not talking about the millions of dollars, but would you not leave $6 million on the table over 8 years to, what's the difference between 80 and 86? Like, really?
Well, possibly. I mean, it's still a lot of money.
I don't know. It is a lot of money, but so is 80.
Yeah. And tax wise, Alberta is a better province than any other province.
Isn't 13 and a half times 8? Like, I'm not going to do the mental math here, but it's almost $100 million.
What, 27 like, times 4? It's $108 million.
Yeah, like, what's the difference between 100 and 108? Like, really?
Well, it's 8.
8 million. Well, obviously.
9%, but or whatever.
Yeah, it's $8 million. I mean, even if you're rich, $8 million is a lot of money.
Yeah, but he's gonna. How much is he gonna make an endorsement? He can go and get that on the site in a heartbeat.
But he can do it. I mean, I guess it depends on what his motivation is, right?
Right.
So,
I'm not saying he's not worth everything that he asked for. All I'm saying is that in this league, would you rather have two extra $4 million players on your team, but then again, they're going to go spend it on Chris Russell anyway, so it doesn't matter.
Uh-huh. So you want to win?
Get your money, kid. Whatever.
Doesn't it speak more though to like the whole structure, like the salary cap structure and these contracts and the limited value that some things are allowed to have, and that you have this 2-year window? Like, I know it opens up the whole thing with parity and all that kind of stuff, but I just think the salary cap is just, it's too much. I don't want to say it's not fair, because
the salary cap and parity thing, like, it's really odd to me. But you talk about the salary cap in the NHL, how many teams have won the Stanley Cup in the last 12 years, and then you look at Major League Baseball where there is no salary cap, and look at how many different teams have won the World Series over the last 12 years. It's kind of funny that we talk about parity and how it's supposed to be an even playing field, but you can count on, on 6 fingers how many teams have won the Stanley Cup, right? When you look at Major League Baseball, which is, there is no salary cap, just a luxury tax. We have teams like the Kansas City Royals winning the World Series. It's really odd. But just I find that very interesting.
I think parity is the worst. I think it causes these low-scoring games, and I think it does nothing for the game. Everybody isn't in it anyway, so why are we pretending? Go to the 3-point wins, let guys start scoring if that's what everybody likes. I don't mind low scoring, but it creates this dumbing down of the game because everybody's scared to lose, and so nobody tries to win. And like you say, it doesn't matter anyway. There's still only 3 or 4 really good teams. Look at basketball, same thing.
Well, but look at it. It's Pittsburgh, LA, Chicago.
How many Stanley Cups? The teams that have the best 2 or 3 players are the teams that win. That's all.
And that,
it's not anything else.
You're right. It has been a lot of the same teams, but let's not forget, Ottawa was a overtime goal away from it being either Ottawa or Nashville winning the Stanley Cup this year.
Right.
It ended up shaking out that way, but I don't see it as, like, if you want to look at a league where the same teams dominate, look at the NBA.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you don't even need to play your season. You may as well just line up Golden State and the Cavs or whatever other super team is going to come in. I mean, like, what's the point if you're the Sacramento Kings? Why even bother?
Yeah, basketball's always been a superstar-driven league, though, right?
Well, it helps when you only have 12 players on your roster, right? And your best players are playing, like, 75% of the game. And so you're really, if you invest in 3 or 4 guys...
it's always been superstar driven. Like, there's one guy that's been able to carry the team, like, over the last 20 years. Anyways, Michael Jordan to Kobe Bryant to, Tim Duncan to, it's just the way that the NBA is. You've got the one guy, you load up, and then you dominate. But anyways, it's a different story.
I think one more thing with the McDavid contract. If you do sign to $13.5 million and you feel like that's weighing you down, he's still your asset, and you're going to get something. Like, it's not like all the GMs are going to run away from this guy.
Right. Someone will pay.
Yeah, and on the flip side, I mean, they're going to lock him down now. So, you know, McDavid, a part of it in terms of why he could, the argument against him leaving money on the table and actually taking everything he can get now is, what could he get in 4 years if right. he was to sign a new contract? Now, that being said, he could sign a four-year contract and bet on himself, but, you know, if Crosby had waited, maybe he could be signing a $13 million contract. True. So he's get that money now. Though this, can you imagine this kid's going to sign what, three more contracts like this?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Like he's
he could sign the exact same one in 8 years.
He's going to make
or more.
He's going to make $104 million or $108 million or whatever, and he's going to be 28, and he's going to sign another contract for 8 years.
Wow.
And in 8 years, what's the inflation on him going to be? So he's going to would sign two contracts and over $200 million.
When he signs that contract with the New Quebec Nordiques or the Seattle, some terrible
the
name.
The Seattle Thunderbirds.
Yeah, the NHL Thunderbirds.
The line is getting 10 then, yes?
If
he scores 50.
Not if Paul Maurice keeps not playing him on the power play, he ain't.
Oh, fuck.
Maybe that's what it is.
What's going to be the rookies? I can't wait.
On the bench.
He's going to...
Where's that?
Adam Lowry, first unit.
All right.
That's why Maurice is still around. He's going to lower Laine's value going into the contract. And
so before I get to the super fans, one more question I have to ask, and particularly for Brian, but everyone, please chime in. What do you think of the Adidas jerseys?
I like them. I like a lot of them, and I don't like a couple of them. Like, New Jersey's is bad, and Edmonton's is a big downgrade.
Nope, wrong.
I love the orange Edmonton jerseys, but these are far worse than the Reebok ones. And all they had to do was just change the color to navy blue, and they would have been best in the league.
They have time. Come on.
Oh yeah, they have time. They.
The Jets, of course, have the exact same jersey. Like two.
They're not exactly the same.
That's not true. They have the little barf bib right at the front there when they choke up a playoff.
And the crests are on top.
Yeah.
And the crests are on top of the shoulders. And the numbers.
And no more shoelaces at the neck. But
I thought it was. No. I thought they were shoelaces. I think that's a shoelace. It's just tucked in.
I'm looking. New Winnipeg Jets jersey. So. New Winnipeg.
Lace.
Oh, unless God. The worst thing about putting in Winnipeg Jets jersey on the internet is all the concept art by, like, just terrible jersey ideas from fans. My God.
Oh, no, I found a good one. I just Googled Winnipeg Jets Adidas. First thing that pops up is the Team North America jersey, just with a Winnipeg Jets logo and the 100th anniversary patch. And on the back, Stanley, number 64.
Oh.
Oh, beauty.
Barf bibs.
Oh, this is $44.99.
I'll do
oh,
it.
Oh, boy.
Make it happen.
Oh, God.
Hey, let's get back to the shoelace thing. Is it a shoelace or not? I think there was.
I don't know.
Sure. Well,
why yeah, they're, a little bit. They're tucked in, though.
It's tucked in all the pictures and stuff. But
Yeah.
It's still there.
I'm just glad the Vegas jersey looks awesome.
The Vegas jersey does look awesome.
I am on team pro Vegas jersey.
Yep.
What about the white gloves?
Love the
best part. Love it. White, go white skates too while you're at it. Like, let's go all the way.
Golden Seals white skates.
Yeah. Yes.
Yep.
Superalls. Why not?
Yeah.
It's Vegas. It has to be flashy.
And even better with these new Adidas jerseys is all of those Reebok jerseys are going to go on sale, and it's going to be amazing.
Yep, I'm already scouring eBay. I have like probably 10 lined up.
I will find so many here, Brian, and I will sell them to you at a profit for me.
That's fine. What happened to that that Toby Enstrom jersey?
You know what? They slowly sold those out, though. The Jets were.
Are they gone?
I think they are all gone now. I don't think they were all sold, but they're gone.
Oh, damn. I was going to buy one, too.
It was $49.99, that one.
Oh, yeah. I definitely would have bought one.
Andrew Ladd was $20 like Canadian.
$15 for you.
I got a PK Subban Montreal Canadiens jersey for $20.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah. Amazing. All right. Ask the Superfans. Here we go. Lots of stuff. I'm going back a little bit before we even asked here just to see if there's anything interesting. No, there isn't. though Jet Strolling says, yeah. First thing that comes up in the Google when I type AIH is autoimmune hepatitis. Why is the podcast named after this?
You know why.
Have you listened?
AJ,
so some of these we talked about, so I will just acknowledge who wrote them. Brett Olson at Brett Olson 2, what do you think of the Mason and Kulikov signings? Do you think Scarbosa could make the Jets?
Not starting the season, but he'll be one of the first call-ups.
I don't know. There's so many forward bodies with only... I mean, the top six is spoken for, and there's about nine guys already. For so
Sorry, guys.
Maybe. I don't know.
It's not like Nick Patan's going to see ice time.
Oh, he will with the Moose.
Well, yeah.
Oh, boy.
How would you rate the Jets selections from the NHL entry draft? I guess because, you know, we don't know a ton about all the selections. How was the draft if you had to give them a letter grade? I'm going to say B+ because I don't know. They were fine.
It's the Jets drafting. It's an A++ all the way, man. Like, how's that ever a doubt? It's the Jets and it's the draft. It's A++. Good. Done.
Two roster players on their roster that were picked after the second round, I believe. So they're great at drafting.
Ooh. Wow. Where's your fire sound effect?
My emoji? I don't plug that in anymore. I should bring it back.
You should.
At Super Jets fan seems to have questions that were asked that he's relaying to us on behalf of people. So the first one is, at Super Jets fan says, I'm not saying Pavlik is a better goaltender, but what makes Pavlik better than Mason? And that seems to be from Jay Toth. at Todd Rose 24, how bad will the Moose be?
Hella bad. They'll be hella bad.
Bad.
Losing Kosmachuk and Howden, and I don't know how they're going to replace him, right?
They got Scarbosa, they got that Buddy Robinson, they got some other defensemen. If Sammy, Nikku, and Poolman are down there, I mean, they can't be as bad as they were last year, could they? Yeah.
They'll be better, but they'll be bad.
Yeah, they'll be bad.
So kind of like what they were compared to the year before.
Yeah, basically.
I mean, I understand they've given up on Kosmachuk and Howden was never a player, but when you're holding 37 contracts, why are you not trying to win when in the AHL and have a guy like, I'm sure Kosmachuk with the right line mates can score 20 goals for the Moose.
My question is why do they love Tanev so much?
Well, that's
Do they love Tanev that much?
They're playing chess. They're trying to get his brother to sign with the Jets down there.
It's like watching chimps play chess against each other.
Navigator Kevin Sheveldayoff is
You really think he moved? Yeah, I don't think he thinks that far
ahead. Jets 1.0 and 2.0 have a history of always having the worst of the two brothers. Always. Always.
You mean Brian Mullen?
Go through the list. Yes, it's infinite.
I think the one video we have on repeats at True North is Tanev's only two goals of the year in the same game in Detroit.
Hey, man, me and Brian saw that game live.
There you go.
Great game.
Did you watch that game? The stud.
he was. I thought there might have been something there, and then I watched the next game.
Hey, Chris, didn't we have the better Shannon brother?
We had both Shannon brothers.
We had both of them. Yeah. We had both of them.
And we had Dave Babbage. We had Dave Babbage, not Wayne.
We had both of them, too, didn't we?
No, we had the better. We drafted the better Dave.
It's too bad.
Better
Babbage. I went through a list with my brother, and there's about 9 of them where we had
the The biggest one that I could think of is Brian Mullen instead of Joe Mullen. But Brian Mullen was like a
could have got Keith Gretzky.
Or Brent Gretzky. Or Brett Lindros. So many players.
Which Gretzky brother was on? Do you guys remember that 7-Up commercial? Do you guys remember the 7-Up commercial? No, probably not. You guys are way too young.
What's 7-Up?
Forget it. It was a 7-Up commercial where Gretzky's brother came up and he'd flip the puck up and he'd hit it twice and hit it out of the air, and then Gretzky had to copy it, and it's an old classic.
Hey, man,
7-Up commercial.
Brent was Brent that played in the NHL, right? Or was it Keith? One of them played like a game for Tampa and now shares the record for most points by two siblings.
By a dad.
Right.
That's awesome.
Let's see. So at Super Jets Fan, another question that he's asking on behalf of somebody. I came from calling semi-pro baseball games. How does it make me qualified to speak about hockey? P. Edmonds?
Semi-pro baseball.
Those guys get paid. That's not semi-pro baseball.
They get $500 a month and a per diem, guys. Like, come on. That's just professional sports.
It's like half off at Sal's. And they can eat that leftover, like, pierogies and popcorn that are at the ballpark after each game.
Goldie's Grill. That's what they get. Yeah. They get all you can eat cards at Goldie's Grill.
Jimmy at Jimmy_Peg. Was Arby surprised that the Jets didn't trade into the top 10 of the entry draft to draft Nick Hague?
I think I liked that tweet I thought earlier. I'm really surprised they didn't take Hague, to be perfectly honest. But apparently they had Vesalainen high on their list. So
well.
At Hanger Hockey asked what we think of the Vegas jersey. We talked about it. Andrew Campbell at Victory 4201 asks, obviously Kulikov signed in Winnipeg because of the pierogies, so where should he go first?
Probably the grocery store.
There's churches all over the place. So they can find good pierogies from the basement. Yeah, there's lots.
You guys remember that when the Russians first came here, and there's the story of the PR guy taking the Russian out to grocery shop, and when he saw all the bread, he just put it all in his shopping cart. he had never seen bread in a grocery store before in Russia.
Because he'd have to wait in the bread line, right? No more bread lines.
Yeah, that's I don't know how true that is, but that's what I'm
saying. You're talking Jets 1.0, right?
Oh yeah.
No, it was Burmese Stroth that. What is this bread?
They don't have bread in Atlanta. It's amazing.
The true story though, when Jets 1.0 was around, I used to work at the bowling alley at the Polo Park Inn, and they used to come. All the Russian Jets used to come to bowl every Thursday afternoon when they were in town. Just kind of cool. Anyways.
At Super Jets Fan, if the Jets aren't in a playoff spot by the end of November, is it Tippett time? Who, Owen Tippett? Are they going to trade for him? That'd be great.
I hope not.
New coach, eh? Yeah, it'll be interesting to see. Like, do you guys think they're going to re-sign both these guys before the season starts?
You no. Talk about what sort of crazy move would it be to re-sign Maurice right now? Given what that tweet suggests, right? Because we all understand that if they come out of the gate 3-12 or something, that's got to be it. But what would be a more typical Jets move than to sign him next week and then you can't fire him? Like, it's such a crazy dilemma.
Okay, so but what do we know about the Jets? Like, for them to go out and do what they did and sign free agents like to a big dollar amount this offseason,
Wouldn't you say that there's a little bit of pressure to do something this year?
And for them there's to buy
but internally. There's been pressure externally from a certain amount of the fan base, but this tells me that internally that they know that they've got to do something and compete this year. Does it not?
What's more
100%
than firing a guy married to the organization?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay, so but then does that mean that the ownership is going to not sign them as a way of saying now you better perform, or are they going to let them go lame duck and say, you guys, this is your chance now?
Well, maybe it's to the point that now they've got to prove themselves, and seeing as Chevy's done his part, right? Now it's up to the coaching to get there. It's up to the coaching to lead these guys to, you know, playoff position.
Do you guys think do you think one could get fired without the other losing their job?
No.
They're a package deal?
I don't think so.
I don't think they're a pack. How could they be a package deal? Yeah.
No, the coach
was Maurice was an interim hire. Like, there's no way. He was a mid-season replacement. There's no way that they're married, you know, they're joined at the hip. If Chevy was, like, that's Chevy's hire, I get that. You know, and Noel was True North's hire, right? But honestly, it's on Maurice now. At this point, it's on Maurice.
Here we go.
How fast does the next GM trade Logan Stanley?
Oh, fuck. I don't think that's a...
That's a serious question, though. How fast until he trades the assets that aren't playing, though, if there's a new GM? How fast does Nick Petan get traded, if assuming that the new coach doesn't play him? Why do you have these guys? Why are you selecting them if you're not going to trade them or play them? That's what I don't understand. So that's what's really intriguing.
Well, it's the new coach first, though. Where does the new coach slot the talent that they have?
Right? Oh, I agree. Yeah. And like, that's why I question, though, if they're not tied. Because they've made all of those players available and you're not using them. That's a combination of both the coach and the GM.
But the GM acquires the assets. The coach is the one who deploys them.
Mm. Yeah, but if you don't like who the coach is deploying, you trade them.
They're on the same team. There's no way that Maurice isn't sort of like an assistant GM, right? Like, he's involved more than we think.
Yeah, a lot of the quotes I've seen have them in lockstep, so I don't know how separate they really are. It'll be interesting to see.
At Mike_Young, there's more to do, but is Chevy done?
acquired, or is he fired?
I think he means for the... Let's just say he means for this this offseason. He's got to sign those contracts.
You got to sign the RFA deals, right?
Yeah. I think he's done otherwise.
Yeah, it'd be interesting.
I think he signs Jager. Well,
don't do that to me. Don't do that to me.
It'd be interesting to see if it sounds like they had a roster trade at the deadline or at the draft. So maybe I don't know.
I mean,
so my sources tell me. Okay. And I'm being
insider.
they've been working on something really big to shake something up since the end of the season.
I've heard.
Yeah, they're not proper.
My sources have told me that Chevy will make a trade or he will not.
Ooh, so, insider.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah. I guess the other one though is this Trouba thing, because this is going to be, if he doesn't sign him in this offseason, again, he still holds all the chips, but we've got that kind of hanging over the team.
He could be signed today.
Aren't we also?
Yes, he could be signed right now.
And aren't we also? And aren't we also concerned about Brian Little?
No,
no.
We're concerned of how they're going to use him as an asset. Like how they manage him this year is paramount. Like if they're in a position to compete and in a playoff spot, then he stays. Right?
Oof.
He stay. But that's what'll happen, right? That's what'll happen.
Well, if they're in a playoff spot and he's contributing, I don't disagree with that. I mean, what are you gonna do?
Then he's the rental. He's your second line center. Like, what are you gonna unload him for if you're in a playoff spot?
What are you going to get back in return?
That's what I'm saying, but there's a lot of people that are insistent that he needs to resign, and I think Jack Roslovic is Brian Little. I don't think there's any way of doing the math of keeping him.
Well, there's a super fans question that should be asked soon that kind of deals with that.
Is there? Let's see here. Well, I'll get to it. Sorry. Hanger Hockey says, is Chevy finally smartening up? I don't want to answer that yet. No. At Brian from AIH, whoever the hell that is. Hey, Brian, why is Jacob Trouba the greatest hockey player of all time?
Was that Brian or the bot?
No, that was Brian.
That was me. Oh, that's a good idea. I should put that into the bot.
Oscillating fan at Mitchell Barton J. With a solidified D and better tandem in goal, is Maurice now capable of creating a culture of team D and disciplined play?
I don't think so.
Maybe.
I don't think so.
Why would that start now?
Well, he hasn't done it anywhere that he's been, to be honest.
At Thomas D701, Thomas Dunn says, why do, in quotation marks, fans insist on studying spreadsheets instead of watching games?
Who has time to watch a game, honestly? It's like 3 hours long.
Exactly, right?
And how do you follow the puck? Like, seriously.
bring back the glowing puck.
The glowing puck with the streaks.
Fox tracks. At Jet Stroll. Oh, go ahead.
That was Fox, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was Fox.
Yeah, puck trucker.
At Jet Strolling says, what is an armchair GM and is it bad? Did you see our armchair prime minister talking about Trudeau today?
I'm going to say, like, what's worse, an armchair GM or an armchair PM?
Like, I can tell you this. I know a lot more about hockey than that fucker knows about running a country. And I know shit about hockey.
Well, it always brings up the whole, for me, is that, have you never criticized a movie before? Like, you've never left a movie and said, oh, that sucked. You just walk out of every movie and be like, that was awesome. Good for them. They did a good job. I don't care that I spent $39. That was great.
What fucking movie are you going to?
With a popcorn and a kid?
Oh, okay.
I'm just saying. You know what I mean?
Like, no, actually, it's not even that, though. It would be more so, I don't know if that movie was good or not because I am not qualified enough to comment. So I guess it was good.
Or you're not qualified.
You're
enough
not. To you're not you have a director.
Telling somebody else, right?
Yeah.
You're not a director. You're not a director or producer. So how the hell can you comment on if this movie was good or not?
Exactly. Exactly. Here we go. No, this is another trade idea. Hanger Hockey at Hanger Hockey asks, would you trade Little and Myers to the Oilers for Drysdale's rights? Yes.
Oh. Winnipeg Jets legend Leon Draisaitl.
In a heartbeat.
Yeah.
In a heartbeat at this point. If this was a trade before the season, absolutely.
A guy.
And I throw one step.
Chiarelli would probably do it too.
What's he ever done to prove that he would trade a great player?
You know what? Throw in Logan Stanley to sweeten the pot, and I think you might have it.
Honestly, you could get. Just get Klefbom too. Just
we might get let's get Klefbom too because we've got that
a literal sack of magic beans, and you could get that entire roster.
Nick Patan fan club at Nick Patan fan club says Nick Patan.
Please, it's all we want,
guys. He's just not. He's just not tall enough.
Pete Tessier says, and at Tedier on Twitter says, why does Chevy do these things? And I believe that is in reply to Hanger Hockey's comment, where do you see emerging guys like Melchiori, Nogier, and Lemieux this season?
Hopefully with the Oilers. the Tulsa Oilers.
In Tulsa?
Yeah, in Tulsa.
A lot of the Draisaitl deal.
Yeah. You know, out of the whole group that he mentioned, Nogier wasn't too bad towards the end of the year. But anyways.
No, I wouldn't mind him as a 7th or 8th D.
Yeah.
Holy shit.
Just because we haven't seen enough of him.
Yeah, I'd rather see him in the seventh slot than Sherrod, really.
Oh, yeah. To be honest. Yeah.
Let's see here. I'm trying to get to everything. There's comments all over the place. Dr. Roctopus at @AlistairMo_Mowat. Will the Jets roster see a significant change in deployment and usage in the coming season compared to the 16-17 season?
I fucking hope so.
Yeah. They better.
If it doesn't, then yeah, then Maurice is getting fired. Sorry.
There's a lot of people that have Lowry penciled in as that third line center, and I'm having a tough time computing.
It makes me want to puke looking at that.
Like, Jesus. I just don't understand where you're how that makes your lineup better.
Guys, he's the third line center, and he's the first unit front net presence. That's what.
That. Sam Gagne showed that you can be a fourth line power play specialist if they're that insistent on the power play because they want a net front presence. Then okay, but I don't care what Bayak says. They're not the best third line in the league. They really aren't. They're not even in the top half.
They're the best third line in the league.
He said that. You guys, right?
He misquoted himself because it should have been the best fourth line in the league is playing as a third line. That's what he should have been saying.
If at 5-on-5, if he's on the third line, I don't care what moves have been made. They're going to be a bubble team at best because that just tells me that the usage is not going to improve.
But even if you look at, like, when we all do it, when we draw up our lines and stuff, it starts making no sense when you put him on the third line, never mind anything else. Because then you're talking about him playing with Patan, you're talking about him playing with Connor, maybe even Ehlers. None of that makes any logical sense. The line mates don't work. But once you put him into the fourth line, then all of a sudden that opens up Roslovic, that opens up Patan, you know what I mean? It changes everything. It logically, never mind how good he is, even take that out of it. His style of play doesn't work.
At Hockey News with a Z, who is worse, Sweeney, Bergevin, McClellan, or Benning?
I'll take E, Shevel Day off.
Shirelli's the worst.
Shirelli's not on that list.
Yeah, exactly. Shirelli's the worst.
Bergevin's the worst.
I don't know. Yeah, Benning's pretty bad too. Although he had a good draft and a good deadline last year. So
yeah,
and he got our Weirkotch signing that we wanted too. So
I'm going to read a thread here because it started with a superfan's question, which the Arctic Ice Hockey account. By the way, the site where this show is hosted. Go see them, I guess.
We're not hosted by that hepatitis. Like,
yeah, we should see if we can get on with them too.
I thought we were on WebMD.
Yeah, get your. Maybe we can get a sponsorship from Twin Rex on this show. Jets and Blue Bombers at Winnipeg Jets says, if Lemieux has a good camp, could he be our sandpaper guy? Arctic Ice Hockey replies, how many fourth liners does one team need? At @Brian_Bennis replies, only three at most, but he may elevate himself to that fourth due to the grit needed, assuming he can be an at-par player on the ice. Arctic Ice Hockey replies and says, what grit does he bring above Lowry? They also say, elbowing people in the head doesn't make a line better, gotta dig pucks out of corners and win battles. And Brian Bennis replies and says, agreed, that's certainly something he needs to work on.
12 points in 60-something games last year, and he's going to jump to the fourth line in the NHL?
Yeah.
Why are people still hanging on to the notion that he might be something? Why?
Well, name recognition, and, I mean, ideally, if he could be... I mean, there is another name, like a name brand player in the league that, you know, Matthew Tkachuk, you know, if he could be that type of player, then yes, optimally, that would be great, but he's not. He's not a very good AHLer.
You know what I think's happened? We have all these fans that are stuck back in the old Jets days.
No, we don't. What are you talking about?
when when we were told as fans by organizations that it takes 3 or 4 years to develop guys, and then they come up and then they work their way up a roster. What we're finding out now is that's total bogus. And by the time a guy's 21 years old, you know exactly the player he's going to be. And there's no growing. And yeah, some guys get a little better, whatever, but there's that arc, right? We're smart enough to know now what Brendan Lemieux is going to be, but there's this group of people that still are under this impression that it takes 5 and 6 and 7 years for guys to turn into something.
Well, I would say what the prototypical model of development for a player these days is Scheifele, right? You know, he's got a couple of years where he's in the mine. Like, you draft him, he's a couple of years in the minors. He comes in, he contributes right away, and he improves steadily season over season. And now we're going to season 7, and he's a top guy on your team. Like, if you're any slower than that, it's, you know, you're probably not going to be peaking out. Like,
We knew in that first camp when he played those first 5 exhibition games that he was going to be this good, though. That's what I'm saying. So we know 2 years ago how good Brendan Lemieux is going to be. It's not very. You steadily improve, but you know what the ceiling is based on your 18, 19, 20-year-old age, is what I'm saying, as far as I can tell.
Well, yeah, that's kind of it, right? If the kid's not in the lineup by the time he's 20, then what is he going to be? He's going to be a borderline NHLer his whole career, right?
Well, like, I've had this conversation a bunch of times, and I've seen it out there that Joel Armia has so much more to give, and I'm like, no, he was drafted the same year as Scheifele. Like, there's been no trajectory. There's been no arc. I mean, we kind of know who he is. Is he an NHLer? Yes, I think so, but people still think they're going to squeeze more out of him, and I'm like, he kind of is who he is by now, isn't he?
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Right, no. But no, but
he's
people,
a good fourth liner.
But people still
think that's
he's going to develop into something more.
Oh, yeah. Like, there's no need.
Like, no.
He's a great depth piece, and that's what this team desperately needs, is better depth. Stop trying to make him into something he's not.
What the second that we have Adam Lowry and Joel Armia on permanent fixtures on the fourth line is when we're going to be a competitive team. Am I wrong?
Yes.
Like,
that would help.
That's my frustration. Is in truth, I think we have the pieces up front, especially, right? And with what we've added, you know, as a plug-in, you know, left-handed defenseman now, I think we have the pieces to compete, but unfortunately, we don't have the right guy to deploy and strategize, right? So that's where it is, to me.
You're dead on.
And at 1 hour and 37 minutes, I think we'll call it a show. So for all you fans out there, where's my show? Where's my show? Here's your fucking show.
AJ.
Oh, AJ.
Shout out to our number one fan.
Yeah, shout out to our fans who we love.
We have one fan that asks every week, though.
I love, though, when I'm reading all these Ask the Super fans, my thought is, you listen? So
my thought is, how do people listen and not follow us? That's what I don't understand.
Oh, I know.
People that are asking the questions don't follow us. I don't get it.
Oh, yeah.
Well, they follow Superfan. That's the Superfan's account.
Sure.
Oh, I know why they don't follow me.
Yeah.
So let's see. Let's go through some quick admin notes. I think the first one is, I don't think we're going to go 2 months without a podcast again, but expect it to be slow this summer. Most of the news is now behind us. I'm sure we will come on once or twice before the season picks up again, but we'll keep you posted on that. Go to @AIHSuperFans on Twitter.com, and you will find out all about what we're going to be doing. Other places to find us on iTunes and Podomatic, and I think we're on Stitcher as well. If you look up AIH Superfans and Google it, you will find us, but go over to iTunes and give us a subscribe, and give us a rating. I think it's good to get either a 5 or a 1-star rating. So anything either 2, 3, or 4, just don't bother. You know, we're not okay. We're either awesome or we're shit.
You like us or you don't.
Yeah.
That's it.
And
remember, we're not experts. We're just fans.
Yes, we don't.
No, we're not just fans. We're super fans.
We are the armchair super fans.
Armchair super fans. Quote, end quote.
Yeah, there you have it. Oh, and I guess, again, go to arcticicehockey.com. Who's the managing editor now?
We don't have a full time.
I think it's Happy T. Kara right now. Or Happy Kara T.
I should swoop in. It'll all be about me. All right.
I'm in the running, so please don't do that.
What? You're in the run? Okay, well, we'll see. Let's see what happens. I was threatening Phil back in the day, and he's disappeared. So don't fuck with me.
Where is Phil?
If you go to friend of the show at Philip A. Ivor, who we haven't heard from in 6 months, if you go to the George College sports kind of journalism website where they post stories, he's posted stories, so he's out there. Either that, or someone has made him disappear and taken over his identity. But other than that, I have no idea. RIP in peace, Phil.
Yes.
So anyways, I am your super fan pal. My name is Alan. Find me on Twitter at Slip with Five Eyes, or Slip. I should say block me on Twitter at Slip.
I'm Roddy Bats. You can find me at Big Poppy Pig City.
RB underscore 18, your boy.
Uh-huh.
Well, I guess it's C-Mac Live.
You can find me on Twitter.com at Brian from AIH Bot.
All right, folks. So hope you enjoyed an hour and 40 minutes of that stuff. And I guess we will see you all in a week or two or a month or later. So go Jets. Go.